And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It is Monday, December 11th, 2017, start of a brand new week. Only a couple more weeks until Christmas, so get out there and get that shopping done. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. In fact, we have a huge amount of stuff going on in the world right now. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer the phone. And our third hour guest today is Mark Pendergrast, who has written a book called The Most Hated Man in America. It's about the Jerry Sandusky case, and it's actually germane to this hysterical witch hunt atmosphere of sexual abuse allegations that we're seeing right now. We'll be getting into that a little bit later in the show. Meanwhile, of course, big story, obviously, was the attempted terror attack in New York in the Port Authority bus station. And apparently it wasn't a very successful one because the bomber actually survived the blast. He's in the hospital. He's seriously hurt. But supposedly he had this pipe bomb attached to his body and it went off. But he survived. Nobody was actually killed. And they're trying to spin this. It's terror, 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 terror. And while they're admitting there is no connection between this individual and ISIS, nonetheless, it was obviously ISIS-inspired. And apparently the guy's name is Akayed Ula. He's been in the country about 7 years, lives in Brooklyn. And he basically entered the country on what is called an F-4 visa. This is a family-based visa. And already people are pointing on out, this wouldn't have happened if we had a reasonable immigration policy in place. And they're absolutely right. Now, the open borders people are trying to downplay it and say, oh, it's a culture of hate. It's this, it's that. Well, okay, it's a culture of hate. Let's keep it over there in their culture and not let it come here. Because it really has reached a ridiculous level. Everybody who gets killed or injured in a terror attack from this point on, it all goes back to that open border agenda. That's who we blame for that. Now, getting on out to Southern California, the fires are just horribly out of control. Santa Barbara is now under threat. The wind shifted. The fire has now spread over 200,000 acres, 583 buildings. And apparently the new evacuation zone extends within 2 miles of the Santa Barbara Zoo. And the California wildfires are now larger than New York City and Boston put together. This is the fifth worst wildfire in California history. It's been the worst year for wildfires in all of California history. Now, getting on out to the international news here, the world is still reacting to Donald Trump's announcement that he recognizes Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and will move the embassy there. And it's starting to look like neither Trump nor Netanyahu correctly assessed what the world reaction was going to be. And so Netanyahu is out there trying to do damage control and just saying, well, the Palestinians have to face the reality over Jerusalem. There will be no peace between us unless they face that new reality. But, of course, Israel's always saying that. We're going to grab this piece of land. If you kick up a fuss, there'll be no peace process. Now, Netanyahu basically came on out with this idea that he expects the European Union to follow Trump's lead and recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Not that he was asking. He expected it. And he got brought up short on that because the EU came on back and said, absolutely not. We reject the recognition of Jerusalem as the Israeli capital. So this is not going as well as they hoped it would. Meanwhile, Nikki Haley is over there at the United Nations screaming, you're not being fair. You're not being fair. We won't put up with it anymore over this United Nations Israel bashing over Jerusalem. Is this girl on drugs or is she just totally, totally clueless? And the reality is that the United Nations is not hostile to Israel. The United Nations is responding to Israel's crimes, which is their job. I mean, Nikki Haley sounds like the kind of person who's going to try and get out of a speeding ticket by saying, you don't like me. This isn't fair. Yes, I was speeding, but you're only writing me the ticket because you hate me, which is kind of ridiculous here. All right, let's take a phone call. Dustin in New Jersey, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Mike. Yeah, black versus white, Jew versus Christian, Muslim versus Christian, Jew. It's all transgender versus non-transgender. This is all like sideshows. You know, like you're being looted, America. You know, you're being lied to, looted. Trillions of dollars missing from the Pentagon. 40,000 troops missing from the roster. I mean, come on. You know, this is all sideshow stuff. Nikki Haley, what a flake, you know. Why is she wearing a cross around her neck? You know, I mean, she's lies. She reads off a script. She's a liar. They all read off scripts. They're all liars, you know. Like, I mean, this is ridiculous already, Mike. I mean, and by the way, Putin's in Egypt making deals, you know. And then
yeah, and
in Syria.
He also paid a surprise visit to Syria.
Exactly. You know, the world's moving away from the U.S. We are, you know, Mike, I'm a nationalist. I'm not a diehard, but, you know, you got to have free trade, partially globalism, which is free trade to a point. But if you want to isolate yourself, America, to the point where, you know, nobody's going to like you, then you're in for a world of hurt, because minus the oil coming from Saudi Arabia, which I talked about already, and the petrodollar, this country's finished. It is. You can't, I mean, this whole thing with letting Israel control the narrative. Everybody knows Israel stole the land. It's just people are afraid to say that, you know? That's what it comes down to. You know, I'm not either. You know, I'm saying it right now. But, I mean, how long can this stuff go on, Mike? I mean, it seems like day after day we keep getting in shape. You know, where's America being made great again? We're in worse shape now than ever.
We're not. In fact, you know, Trump has basically ended U.S. influence in the Middle East with this one move. They're pivoting towards Russia. They're pivoting toward China. And from Israel's point of view, they're a parasitic nation. We're not the only host they are feeding off. And if the United States just shrivels up and falls to dust, Israel will just happily waddle off and find another host to attach to. And that's just the way it's
done. It won't be the same, though. They suck off more from the U.S. than anybody else. They will have – their economy would shrink because they just can't afford – even if they get money from other nations, they don't get the same amount from us. So if we fail, they're finished, too.
I don't think finished would be the good word. They would certainly be diminished in power. But it's an unstable situation. There's no question about it. Anyway, Dustin, we're going to let you go because we got a lot of stuff to cover before our third hour guest. We're going to do a shout out now to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. Now, over in Turkey, Erdogan is saying the recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital is null and void. Nobody is going along with this, even countries that supposedly were our allies, like much of Europe. And apparently there have been huge protests against the United States and against Israel and in Istanbul. And basically Palestinian ambassador to Ankara, Fayyad Mustafa, was out there saying peace can never prevail without independence of Palestine. And Palestine cannot be an independent state without Jerusalem as its capital. And here's where you need to keep in mind. Palestine is willing to share Jerusalem with Israel. Israel wants it all. And it's been that kind of an attitude that is behind all of the pain and suffering and death over these last half century here. Now, Erdogan's gone further, saying that the U.S. is a partner in bloodshed with the decision about Jerusalem. With its decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, the United States has become a partner in the bloodshed. The statement by U.S. President Donald Trump does not bind us, nor does it bind Jerusalem or the Muslim world. And that is a key point to keep in mind. Donald Trump saying that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel does not, in fact, change its legal status under international law. It was a totally empty, symbolic gesture. And look at the damage it has done to our nation. Think of all those years that the United States has tried to maintain cordial relations with Middle Eastern nations, and Trump just threw it all away. And the damage is done. Even if Trump came on out tomorrow and said, I've changed my mind, Tel Aviv is the capital of Israel, the damage is done. They're already turning away from the United States and turning toward China, turning toward Russia. Apparently, there's been another huge protest up in Berlin over Trump's statement on Jerusalem. And in Beirut, rioters actually succeeded in breaching the gates on the United States Embassy. They had to be repelled by tear gas and water cannon. So this is not going anyway. And apparently thousands of Moroccans joined the rally against the U.S. stunt on Jerusalem. This was in Morocco's capital of Rabat. And the participants carried flags of Palestine and Morocco and chanted slogans decrying the decision of U.S. President Donald Trump to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, claimed by Israel and Palestine as their capital. Now, Israel, of course, is out there saying, well, Jerusalem's been our capital for 3,000 years. Not exactly when you remember that the vast majority of Jews living in Israel are Ashkenazis, who are not the genetic descendants of the biblical Hebrews. They're descended from Central Asian Khazars who converted to Judaism in 800 AD. And that does not give them any more claim over Israel than if I were to adopt a religion of the Native Americans and say, well, we now own this place. You have to get out because we, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, we're here first. Algeria has denounced the U.S. recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Meanwhile, Hezbollah Secretary General Saeed Hassan Nasrallah is saying it's time for a third Palestinian intifada. Well, if Trump wanted to set fire to the Middle East, he did a really good job of it. And if he didn't realize this is what was going to happen, then clearly he's getting bad advice. Over in Indonesia, they're burning U.S. and Israeli flags. They've had four solid days of protests over this decision. Even sports fans are getting in on this, okay? The despite fines levied on the Scottish club, soccer club, last year by UEFA for political statements, the Celtic football club fans are at it again. They were at a game at Edinburgh's Eastern Road Stadium, and they were holding up banners, Jerusalem is Palestine, blank Trump, and you can figure out what goes in there as well. But here's an article that really says it all over in Unz.com. Trump risks uniting the entire Arab world against the United States. Risks it? I think he's just about accomplished it. Now, Saudi Arabia may be still trying to look at where their best advantage is going to be. But there's no question that the decades of diplomacy that the United States has invested in the Middle East just got thrown out the window. Story coming on out from Express in Great Britain. Donald Trump is told to drop the illegal Jerusalem plan as Arab countries consider sanctions. Last Friday, I said this was probably where it was going to go. They're not going to militarily attack Israel. They're not going to militarily attack the United States of America. But they've got their hands on those valves on the oil pipelines. If they declare an embargo for oil coming to the United States of America and they drop the petrodollar at the same time, the party is over. Gas prices are going to go right through the roof, and the United States does not have enough in its strategic petroleum reserves to keep oil prices reasonable to the American people at the same time they're fighting all these wars all over the globe, which burn up petroleum products like there's no tomorrow. So they're looking at economic sanctions against the United States. The United States is going to get a taste of its own medicine. Who's going to be made to suffer for that? You. Now, needless to say, on the other side, in Israel, they're already talking about the third temple. We're going to build the third temple. The Messiah is going to come. The Messiah is going to come. Actually, they've already had three temples. There was the first temple, then there was the second temple, and that was torn down and replaced by Herod. And when the Messiah didn't show up, they said, well, it was actually a renovation, a remodel. It wasn't really the third temple. It's insane. It's insane. Now then, let's get on back to the domestic politics. Let's look at the scorecard for Strzokgate and Robert Mueller's cover-up. We've had almost 18 months after Obama's Justice Department and the FBI launched the Russiagate investigation, and 7 months after Special Counsel Robert Mueller took the investigation over, the sum total of what they have achieved for $7 million is an indictment of Paul Manafort and Rick Gates, which concerns entirely their prior financial dealings with no connection to the Russiagate collusion allegations, an indictment for lying to the FBI of George Papadopoulos, the junior volunteer staffer of the Trump campaign, who during the 2016 presidential election had certain contacts with members of a Moscow-based Russian non-governmental organization, which he sought to pass off as more important than they really were. And again, this does not touch on the Russiagate collusion allegations. And finally, they got an indictment of Michael Flynn for lying to the FBI, arising from his perfectly legitimate and entirely legal contacts with the Russian ambassador after the 2016 presidential election, which also does not touch on the Russiagate collusion allegations, and which, frankly, to many observers, looks like it was an act of entrapment by the FBI. Of actual evidence to substantiate the claims of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia during the election, Mueller has come up with zero, zip, nada. It is not there. It's a fishing expedition, and they're not finding any fish at all. Now, do you remember Fusion GPS? This was the company that was hired by the Democrats and the Hillary campaign to come up with any damaging information they could find on Trump. And now we're beginning to realize, because of the dossier, Fusion GPS wasn't doing research. They were trying to create a plausible fiction. And apparently at one point, Fusion GPS tried to create this story where Donald Trump was hanging out with Jeff Epstein. And basically, Fusion founder Glenn Simpson pushed the idea that Trump and Jeff Epstein were really close together. And of course, as you remember, Epstein pled guilty in 2008 to soliciting sex from an underage girl. And now he lives down in the Caribbean where he can do what he wants to do. But the actual Trump-Epstein link appears purely social, contrasting that with Bill Clinton's 20-plus plane rides on Epstein's Lolita Express private jet. Now, and you have to wonder, what's wrong with these people? Is this the best that we can do for political leadership? Out in California, Democratic California Assemblyman Matt Dibadna of Woodland Hills has announced his resignation on Friday after being accused of pleasuring himself in front of a lobbyist at a party in Las Vegas. Now, he's denying the allegations, but he's resigning anyway. Apparently, they're trying to regurgitate the allegations of Trump harassing women that they used during last year's election. And so one of Trump's accusers has gone public again, saying that Trump kissed her 12 years ago and it ruined her life. Her life was over after that one kiss. Now, just think, if she'd actually kissed Trump back, she'd be the first lady now. Last Friday, the U.S. corporate media suffered its most humiliating debacle in ages, led the way by CNN, and now they're just stonewalling and saying, well, you know, we're not going to talk about it. The same way that BBC talks about how they were reporting on the collapse of World Trade Center 7 more than 20 minutes before it actually happened. Well, we don't know, and we're not going to say. And basically, it has to do with this attempt to create the idea that WikiLeaks and the Trump Organization were sharing DNC emails through back channels. And we're talking about this major media debacle that began last Friday with CNN, and then it was picked up by MSNBC and CBS without taking a look at what was really going on. And the gist of CNN's story was that on September 4th, which was before WikiLeaks publicly announced the DNC emails, there was an email from Michael J. Erickson to the Trump campaign indicating where they could find the files, where they could look at it. And CNN was out there saying, see, this proves this is collusion with Russia, because as we all know, WikiLeaks is an arm of Russian propaganda. They're a hostile foreign state actor. This is the proof. And everybody was just out there and they were just, you know, popping the champagne corks, until the Washington Post came on out to their credit and said, you've got a major part of the story in wrong, because the email was not dated September 4th, as CNN claimed, but September 14th, after WikiLeaks had already published access to the DNC emails online. So this Michael J. Erickson was simply some random individual who wrote on in and said, you guys got to look at this. exactly the opposite of what CNN presented that it was. All right, we've got some callers waiting on the line. We're going to start with John in Canada. Aloha, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Mike. Good show, as always. I want to backtrack a little bit and get onto the subject of Jerusalem. I'm upset that the U.S. did what they did, but I think I've found a way that I could sort of subtly protest that. And from now on, if I ever refer to Jerusalem in terms of Israel, I will call it West Jerusalem. And anything regarding the Palestinians, I will refer to Jerusalem as East Jerusalem. And that's a subtle way of protesting the fact, because just like Berlin was divided in the Cold War, there was a way of sort of differentiating between what you thought was the good Berlin and what you thought was the bad Berlin. Now, I think it's the opposite way this time. I think East Jerusalem is a way of just protesting in a subtle way against that decision.
And they've even got a wall.
They've even got a wall, and then you're sort of calling it for what it is. It's a divided city, and Israel, I think they'd love to have the entire carte blanche, you know, of Jerusalem. And by calling it for what it is, I think it's a way of sort of putting it back in their face and saying, you know what, until you actually formally take control of the entire Jerusalem, it's not all yours. I don't know what you think of that.
Well, I think looking at the two cases in history tells you where the bias is coming on down, because when the Soviet Union cut off access to West Berlin to try and starve them into surrendering their own government and accepting rule by the Soviet Union, the world responded with the massive airlift, the Berlin airlift, just flying airplanes of food and water and medicine and everything to keep West Berlin going. Well, now you have Israel is attempting to basically cordon off and strangle East Jerusalem, and the world does nothing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's. I'm never going to call it just by its term of Jerusalem. From now on, I'm either going to call it East Jerusalem or West Jerusalem. And
I think it's a good idea.
Right on. Okay, thanks, Mike. I'll get off the phone now.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to switch over to Margie in California. Aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Mark. Yesterday, I know a Syrian, he owns a small store, and I just asked him what he thought of what Trump did as far as claiming Jerusalem as the capital for Israel, and I asked him, what do you think about that? And he said, I think Trump, that's Trump's way of asking Netanyahu for help. Because there are strong rumors that they're planning on assassinating him. They're planning on doing things to Trump. And maybe that's his way of asking Netanyahu to help protect him in Washington.
Well, that may be one theory, but we do know that AIPAC and Netanyahu have been lobbying for this for decades. We know that Trump's main financial support, Sheldon Adelson, said this was what he wanted. And so Trump is taking care of his supporters and his donors, but he obviously did not really consider the long-term results of what he was doing.
Yeah, but I do kind of think that he needs some kind of protection. I don't know if the military will be protecting him that much.
Well, I know Donald Trump has the regular Secret Service protective detail, which unfortunately hasn't been all that impressive of late. I think he still has his own private security as well. And I really do hope they're doing their job, because as disappointed as I am in Donald Trump, I don't want anything to happen to him because the resulting chaos is just going to make things that much worse.
Yes, you're right.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for the phone call. We have another caller waiting on the line, but we're too close to the commercial break. So we're going to take a break for some words from our advertisers. And when we come on back, take this phone call, get on back to the news, including all of the times CNN has botched the news this year alone. We're going to go back to the telephones now. Max in Canada. Aloha, Max. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Max in Canada. No, Max in Connecticut.
Okay. What's on your mind?
My pronunciation is a little bit, worse. Anyway, because we are talking about the Bible, and Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. So I would like to ask a question. Okay, Samaria, what was the capital of what? If somebody doesn't know the history, or real history, Samaria was the capital of what?
Well, let me ask you this question. Can you show me the capital of the Sioux Nation? And yet nobody doubts the Sioux Nation actually existed.
No, I don't get it. The Sioux Nation, what do you say?
No, I said the Sioux Nation, the American Indian, the Sioux Nation. You can't point to any place as being their capital. Doesn't mean they didn't exist. That's one of the arguments we're getting from Israel now is, well, you know, we can't point to an official location of Palestine. Therefore, they didn't really exist. And
I'm talking in the Bible, back in the history. So we should not even back in the history, the Bible. Okay, Samaria was the capital of the kingdom of Israel. It was not Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the capital of the kingdom of the Judea. That is what.
Okay.
Samaria. Do you know Samaria? I don't know. Maybe I don't pronounce it right.
And, I thought it was pronounced Samaria. There's a problem here in that maps change over time. And the fact of the matter is that the Israelites were driven out of that part of the world, and they're trying to come on in and say, well, we should just undo all those thousands of years of history and give it back to them. That makes about as much sense as the Native Americans saying, let's unwind the last several hundred years of history and give North America back to the indigenous tribes. We're always moving into the future. The point is that Israel is unfortunately founded on the writings of some Bronze Age goat herders, and they're still running their government as if they're Bronze Age warlords, and that is way out of touch in the nuclear age. And all Israel has to do is start being fair and balanced to give to the Palestinians that which Israel demands for itself, a right to exist in a capital city, and all this will go away. But unfortunately, Israel's government's attitude continues to be, no, we're supposed to have it all, and maybe if you're nice to us, we'll give you something down the road.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you in that. Yeah, I'm with you in that. Because today, for example, on the news, I read that Benjamin Netanyahu, he blew up the Bible, saying that Jerusalem was the capital of Israel. But that is not true. Jerusalem was never the capital of Israel. They're using this. It was Samaria?
Samaria, I think is the pronunciation.
Yeah, Samaria. Okay. Samaria was the capital of the kingdom of the Israel. That is history. And also, that is the history. It was not Jerusalem. Never was Jerusalem the capital of maybe the Israelites. Some of the point of time between David and Solomon. But there was a different history. Also the archaeologists that they cannot figure out yet.
The focus on Jerusalem isn't what it's a capital of. It's obviously the religious overlap. And what's really amazing is looking at all the war and bloodshed, it's easy to forget that all of these religions began with a single source of Abraham, who was a monotheist along the same order as Amenhotep IV, or Akhenaten, as he liked to call himself. But you've got the Christian holy sites are there, Judaism's holy sites are there. Some of the Muslim holy sites are there. That's why the United Nations declared it a shared city. Everybody gets to go there and say their prayers and do whatever their religious observances are. But again, from Israel's point of view, they want it all. They want the Christians out. They want the Muslims out. They want to tear down the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they don't care what bloodshed will result from that. Anyway, Max, thanks an awful lot. We need to move along because we got a lot of stuff to cover before our third hour guest.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We're going to let you go. Now, CNN, it's kind of hard to imagine how they can continue to consider themselves a professional journalistic enterprise with all the mess ups they keep doing. And again, the one they did last Friday, that was epic. And they are getting publicly castigated for it, for once again coming on out with facts that seem tailor-made to push the idea of Trump-Russian collusion, and it turns out to be completely bogus. So let's look back at CNN's performance this year alone. On June 6th, CNN ran a story that claimed former FBI Director James Comey would use his testimony the next day to refute President Trump's claim that Comey had assured him three separate times he was not under FBI investigation. That story was debunked the very same day when Comey's prepared remarks were released to the public, showing that Comey was going to confirm Trump's assertion. And this botched story had four bylines, including those of three veteran journalists, Jake Tapper, Gloria Borger, and executive editor Eric Lichtblau. These are not underlings. These are people with long careers. They had just come on over from the New York Times. Later that same month, CNN published, deleted, then retracted, and apologized for an article that claimed Trump advisor Anthony Scaramucci was the subject of a Senate investigation for his ties to Russian bankers. And after an intense backlash, three key members of CNN's investigative team resigned or were forced to resign over their role in that story. Now, CNN was one of several establishment medias to spread fake news about a new study on Russian influence in the United States. And CNN cited the study from the Oxford Internet Institute to show that fake news targeted swing states during election week. But the study didn't show that, as the Daily Caller first reported. The study focused on junk news, not fake news, and then deliberately included conservative outlets like the Washington Examiner and Breitbart News in their definition of fake news. In other words, the study itself was biased. This was about the same time that Washington Post came on out saying that all of the independent media are arms of Russian propaganda, including whatreallyhappened.com, which I can't tell you how proud that made me. CNN did another whoopsie when they came on out saying that a Republican donor had initially funded that Russia dossier. And that, of course, we know is completely incorrect. It was originally funded by the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign. And then later on, apparently, some additional money was thrown in from the FBI. Now, apparently, Republican donor Paul Singer had contracted with Fusion GPS for research, but it was completely unconnected to the dossier. Now, you remember last month when Trump was in Japan and they did this thing about how Trump doesn't know how to feed the fish at the temples. He just took his box of food and just dumped it in all at once. And they would just talk about desperation on the cusp of madness. They wanted to make Trump look like he was some kind of a goofball and didn't include the part that Abe himself, after doing the feeding, just threw the rest of the food in, which is what you do. Over at the Byoto Inn Temple, when Claire and I go to feed the fish, you'll feed a little bit. Then when you get down to the bottom of the bag, you just shake it on out. And they ran with this story just trying to harm him. And it goes on and on. When Trump was in Japan, CNN tried to make it look like Trump was unaware of the fact that Japanese automakers have factories here in the United States of America. These are not mistakes. These are lies. And the people doing these lies are not underlings. They're not newbies. They're not people just out of journalism school. We're talking about top editors and reporters. We're talking about prostitutes and correspondents. And they're starting to feel the pressure over there. Because apparently over at The Atlantic, senior editor David Frum came on out with a comment that you, the American people, should trust the liberal media because of the endless mistakes and you should just accept it as part of the process of bringing truth to light. Now, that is desperation on the cusp of madness. Speaking of other false news, we've been following the Judge Roy Moore situation. Tomorrow's the special election in Alabama, and already people are on guard for massive election fraud. Now, despite all of these allegations of sexual harassment, most of which have been discredited now, Roy Moore has been leading in the polls. And then all of a sudden today, just one day before the election, Doug Jones is 10 points ahead. They're telegraphing that they're going to steal this election. Now, let's get into the war zones. There's a lot of stuff going on. In Syria, Putin has now ordered the withdrawal of the Russian forces from Syria. And basically, they're clearing the desert area in eastern Syria from ISIS. And Syria's and Hezbollah forces are now up to the tasks. Now, the U.S.-led coalition believes that 3,000 ISIS members remains in Iraq, and they're saying they're going to stay there, even though Syria wants them to go. Now, Putin, of course, is traveling all over that part of the world, and he made a surprise visit to Syria, was very warmly received. And so, however this war ends, Syria is not going to be in the U.S. sphere of influence. In fact, after this Jerusalem move, it's going to be hard to find any Middle Eastern nation outside of Israel, and maybe Saudi Arabia, big question mark over that one, that is still willing to listen to anything the United States has to say. And here's where it gets really bizarre. The United States is claiming credit for winning the anti-ISIS fight, and it denies interfering with Russia's Syria operations. They're claiming credit for wiping out ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Remember what I said the other day? If you were to look at American movies and TV shows, you would probably believe that the United States won World War I and World War II all by itself, which is certainly not true. And here they are again, trying to take credit, saying, yes, we are victorious, because they don't want to admit they lost this one. And here is where it's getting really serious. This is an article out of Russia Insider, where apparently the Pentagon is now threatening to shoot down Russian jets over eastern Syria. That's our sky. That's our turf. Well, eastern Syria is where the remnants of the U.S.-backed terrorists, ISIS and Al-Qaeda, are still being still in operation. I don't think we want to get into an aerial furball with Russian aviation, but it looks like it's only a matter of time before this actually happens. Now, Iran has extended an olive branch to Saudi Arabia, saying that they want to go back to being friends with Saudi Arabia if Saudi Arabia will get out of Yemen and basically end their new ties with Israel. This is coming from Rouhani. And it's not entirely without merit, because Israel has been luring Saudi Arabia in with all this talk about what a threat Iran is to everybody. They're going to have nuclear weapons in a couple of weeks. And by the way, Israel's been making that claim for 30 years now. Saudi Arabia may be looking at all their neighbors who are now pivoting away from the United States and Israel toward Russia and realizing that they don't want to be isolated. They want to go on doing business with their neighbors. So it's too soon to say what Crown Prince bin Salman is going to do. But Iran apparently feels that there is an opportunity there or rapprochement. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister Mohammad Javad Zarif is basically asking Europe not to side with the U.S. against Iran's missile program. He's calling the P5+1 deal a rare triumph of diplomacy over confrontation, and he's saying that Europe, instead of siding with Washington and getting into another military crisis, ought to say the deal is working. Now, he's actually playing to sympathetic ears, because many of the other signatories to the P5+1 deal are saying it's working. Why are we messing with it? Well, it's because the United States government, goaded by Israel, wants a war with Iran. They've been drooling over war with Iran for years to smash up Iran so it's Israel can attain regional dominance. Up in Ukraine, things are getting very interesting there as well. Apparently, there's been a huge demonstration in Kiev to demand the release of Saakashvili from jail. And they're continuing to call for the impeachment of Poroshenko. Apparently, local media did a poll and found 92% of Ukrainians favor the return of the previous government of Viktor Yanukovych. They've had it with their puppet rulers. They want him out. We're talking about the war agenda. The war drums are out there. Now, Nikki Haley, when she's not out there screaming about how unfair the United Nations is to Israel, apparently is saying that the United States will take North Korea into our own hands if China doesn't do more. Well, when did China get dragged into this? If this is the U.S. aggression against North Korea, I'm sure China doesn't feel like being the U.S. errand boy. So the U.S. kicked up this mess in North Korea with all the saber rattling and the drills and all the harsh rhetoric, and they've brought it to the edge of a crisis. And now what do? They turn around and say, you, China, fix this. China, I don't think, is going to do anything about it. So Haley's out there talking tough, saying we're going to take care of North Korea ourselves. Okay, Nikki, here's your rifle. Here's your parachute. We ran out of the camo BDUs, and all we have left are these Dayglow orange jumpsuits from the CIA's torture centers. So watch your head climbing into that military transport, and we'll call North Korea and tell them you are on your way to whip their rear end all by yourself. The rest of us, we've had enough of war. Over this last 16 years and before that, we're going to sit this one out. Meanwhile, in another example of saber rattling, Japan, United States, and South Korea are going to hold missile tracking drills off the coast of North Korea. Now, here's an interesting story. I don't know where this is going to go, but apparently the Pentagon is about to undergo its first ever audit after decades of sloppy accounting and missing trillions. Remember back on September 10th, 2001, Don Rumsfeld got up there and said, well, we just misplaced another $3 trillion. No idea where it went. Yuck, 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 yuck. Should have been the scandal of the decade. But of course, 24 hours later, 9/11 happened. And the plane that hit the Pentagon actually flew around the Pentagon, came in from the other side, and crashed into the offices where bookkeepers were trying to find where some of that money had gone. So we know there's going to be a break in the records. So good luck on that one. And meanwhile, undeterred by the threat of an audit, trying to find out where all that money went, apparently the military, the Pentagon, are out there saying, we need more. We need more. We lag behind the modernization process of our main opponents, Russia and China. We could actually lose if we go to war with them. Good reason not to go to war with them. And so, once again, the Pentagon is out there saying, we need all your money. We need all your children. Endless war forever. So they're already out there having wasted such huge amounts of money, brought such misery around the globe, and they want more money. We don't have it. Americans don't have jobs with which to earn the money to get taxed off for the Pentagon budget. Quality of thinking coming out of Washington, D.C. these days, is it lead in the water? Are they all on antidepressants? They do all seem to behave like spoiled children, rolling around kicking and screaming, we want more money for tanks, we want more money for an aircraft carrier, we need to replace the littoral combat ships, and on and on and on. Now, do you remember back when that torture scandal broke, and it was a big horrible thing. Americans just weren't used to the idea of the United States employing torture. And of course, the government denied it. Then they couldn't deny it anymore. And Congress investigated, and there was an abridged report, a whitewash that was public. The final report, where all the evidence was 6,700 pages. And the CIA has just announced they've lost it. I was here just a minute ago. We have no idea.
listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.